You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Another special edition Saturday podcast. I'm not sure if these should be so special anymore. This is the third straight Saturday podcast we've done on the Locked On Pacers channel. Obviously, you guys are going to like this. We kind of can view our listenerships per podcast, and the Saturday one always do well. I personally prefer Saturday podcasts, or at least a weekend podcast. You know, I do a lot of errands on the weekends. I do a lot of work out on the weekends sometimes. And it's always nice to have some additional content that's kind of fresh on a Sunday when you're kind of like, you know, I'm sick of football and I want to kind of listen to some NBA content. And there's not always fresh content. You know, it's all from Friday. So I hope you guys enjoy this. If you enjoy this kind of Saturday podcast, I would like to keep doing some of them. Maybe skip Friday pods and just do Saturday ones. Or do both. You know, let's get about 5 podcasts a week, so there might be another day we take off. Tweet at me at FriedmanAdam5 or the show at Locked On Pacers to kind of let us know if you like these Saturday podcasts, because honestly, right now our viewership for them has been pretty good, but I don't know if you guys enjoy them or not. 2 big things for today's podcast, obviously. We're going to be breaking down the Pacers' win over the Miami Heat, their 110-102 win, and then previewing the Pacers-Rockets game on Sunday. Obviously, the Rockets on Monday, there'll be some key differences. I believe Eric Gordon's pitched to play, but other things. So that's the 2 things on this podcast we're going to be hitting today. Let's take a quick break, and we'll get to today's podcast. The first thing I noticed in the Pacers' 110-102 win over the Miami Heat was Miles Turner down the stretch. Obviously, Turner got in foul trouble early, played sporadically, you know, only got 24 minutes in the game. Sponge actually played 24 as well, a split even for them, but there was a stretch between the third and fourth quarter. Sabonis played probably, I think, 11 straight minutes in length from about the 6-minute mark to the other 6-minute mark, give or take, maybe 12 minutes. But it felt like it was going to be another game where they were better off with Sabonis in. They were going to get more scoring Sabonis, whatever it was. But I thought Turner came in and in the fourth quarter really stepped up into a level that kind of I think I've been expecting to see from him consistently. We're only seeing it sporadically, so I mean, it's kind of with a, I'm saying with a grain of salt, but man, he took Whiteside onto the rim and scored one time. He got another lay-in kind of over Whiteside. He did a couple good plays around the rim. He made a couple great screens. I was defensively, he was a monster. It might be just these Friday games. Last Friday, also had a great game against the Bulls. You know, I was skeptical after the Bulls game where they're saying that was kind of a turning point because the Bulls are pretty bad. But the Heat, I mean, the Heat are, a legitimate playoff team in the East, at least. I mean, I don't know if they'll make the playoffs or not, but they're well-coached. Whiteside is a solid center. He's always somebody who's tough to go against, even though he can be up and down at nights and he's not, you know, consistent and he's kind of a pill and all of that. But he's just a very hard center to compete against in terms of rebounding. He got 20 rebounds tonight. I mean, he's a good rebounding NBA player, which makes it hard for a guy like Turner, who isn't a great rebounder, whose strength comes from his defense and being able to kind of attack the rim. But when you can kind of float the ball to Whiteside, that takes away some of Turner's lethal ability at blocking point guard, you guys drive to the rim. But I thought Turner was fantastic. The last 5 minutes, I think that's the best 5 minutes I've seen from him against a good team this season. You know, he didn't make any offensive fouls. He was, you know, I know he missed a 3, which, you know, he needs to figure that out. But honestly, I thought he played the best I've seen him play in terms of just, you know, confidence, where he didn't look like he was lost there. He made quick decisions, which is always his problem. He made a quick decision on to take from the 3-point line, take Whiteside to the rim and score. You know, I think a big thing with Turner that I'm still looking for is that 3-point shooting. The team either is not designing it for him or he is just not, you know, wanting to take them. But, you know, his ability to knock down the 3 at like a 35% mark last season was huge. And it was one of the few things in offense that made him extremely valuable. Where this season, I'm going to pull up his bench real quick, but I know it's not anywhere near 30. He's barely taken any per game. I mean, so far this season he's shooting 14%. 0.3% from 3-point range. That's terrible. He's averaging through the first 13 games about 1.2 per game. So that comes out to my head real fast, probably about 16 threes total. I mean, that's just not good. I mean, he's a career 34% 3-point shooter. I mean, that's just not good. And I don't know if it's because he didn't make an emphasis on it this offseason, which I thought he kind of would. I know he had said some things about how he didn't want to be known as a 3-point shooter or whatever it was, but he was becoming a unicorn, and it seems odd that he went away from that. And you know, I might blame coaching a little bit. I feel like Nate McMillan, you know, we continue to see sort of this old style play from Nate McMillan. And I wonder if he told Turner to work on your post game and not your 3-point shooting. But that's something just, it's just frustrating, to be honest. I mean, this, you know, I understand that there's a lot of mid-range shots and take the open shot or whatever, but remember, they were 7-20 from three today. I don't know what it is. They need to figure out that 3-point shooting, because Turner needs to become a better 3-point shooter, because that is the only way, ultimately, he can become the most effective offensive player. Because at the end of games, they are running plays through Oladipo, and Turner can set the screen all he wants, but if Turner isn't the lethal pick and pop off that screen, it doesn't really matter. So that's where he has to have his strength. Defensively, Turner is going to be great. I mean, I think sometimes I personally underrate his defensive value at the end of games, where he just makes plays, man. He just blocks shots, and his key is just not making enough mistakes on the offensive end to kind of negate his good defensive plays. But defensively, at the end of games, he makes plays. I mean, they definitely let him play more. I mean, at the end of games, they just don't call as many tic-tac-y fouls he gets called for, which he gets called for a bunch of tic-tac fouls. I mean, it's arm here, you know, did he go straight up or did he bend? I mean, that's what he gets called for. And some of that is just, you know, he's doing the best he can, and the refs are just kind of hurting him. But at the end of games, they let him play. They don't call everything, so that's where he's so valuable, because he can take the contact. He is a big dude. He is like, you know, he's not afraid if a guy comes into him and just stand there and take it and block the shot. So that's where he's so effective at the end of games. And, you know, tonight he was effective because he was able to get to the rim a couple times in the last 5 minutes and was able to make a couple effective screens, where if he can just limit the fact of, you know, those offensive foul on the screens and make a couple plays to make him worthwhile on offense, he's all of a sudden, you know, he's as good as Sabonis in terms of plus-minus, because Sabonis is all offense, and defense he's okay, and he's, you know, very up and down and mediocre. But, you know, and that's no knock on Sabonis, who I thought had another great night, 17-11. But Turner, when it matters most defensively, he's on point, it seems like. And that's where it seems like he's made the biggest jump in terms of just awareness. And, you know, he did this last year too, a couple times. I mean, I remember the Memphis game last year where he made the big block. I believe it was actually on Tyreek Evans or one of the guards from Memphis last year to win a game. But now there's twice in 2 weeks, Turner's just been a stellar end of game defensive player. And so it obviously depends situationally when he should play. But, I mean, if he could just get some of the even just small, minor touch up on offense, which is like putting the ball on the ground more when he has a chance, you know, clearing out. I mean, I thought that was really effective against Whiteside, where they cleared him out, basically let him, he saw the open floor, put the ball on the ground, went to the rim and scored. I mean, he has that ability. Or it's just shooting more threes and stuff like that. It would just be enough to kind of push him, and it would probably keep the detractors off his back. Because Sabonis is coming for him. Sabonis is playing great constantly. Sabonis is not as much foul trouble. He's getting a ton of rebounds. He's a really effective offensive player, 6 of 7 tonight. I mean, Sabonis is coming for a starting job. So Turner's got to kind of, he's got to find that next little gear offensively, because he has it. You see flashes of it. He has it. He's just got to consistently be doing it. And I hope, for God's sake, he can. I really hope he can, because, you know, defensively, Turner at the end of games, like I said, he is just a monster. I mean, he's just a monster defensive at the end of games. And if he could just be, you know, 3/4 of Sabonis offensively, you know, Sabonis go 6 of 7, Turner could go 4 of 7 and nail 3, that would be huge. I mean, that would just, it would really, really solidify him as a starting center, which right now I think it's still on edge whether he should be the starting center. Obviously, you know, they're both important. So, you know, Tony did a whole thing on this on Monday's podcast. Listen to that if you want to. But, you know, they both have their values, and having both is extremely valuable, because you can run different lines. Obviously, you can do different things. But, I mean, Turner clearly defensively is so far ahead of Sabonis, and it feels like Sabonis is farther ahead offensively, but that Turner can make up the gap more, because Sabonis can't make up the gap defensively with Turner, because some of that is just Turner's raw athletic talent, where the height and the length and that ability, where Sabonis can't catch that. But offensively, Turner should be able to do a lot of things Sabonis can, because he's got some of the same kind of, you know, skill. He can put the ball on the ground when he needs to. If he just trusted himself with the ball more, he can post guys up at times. He's a better 3-point shooter. So, you know, there's just a disconnect, I think, right now offensively for Turner. I don't know whether it's a coaching thing, whether they're not coaching him right or offensively or what, but hopefully they can kind of work this out over the next, so they're 8-5, so there's 69 games left. Make whatever joke you want to make about that. But, you know, maybe the next 20, 30 games they can just kind of find him offensive spots. You know, I'm not saying he needs to have 20 points. I know, I think those days are gone. I think those thoughts of him being a 20-point guy are gone. But just finding him to go 5 of 9. He went 4 of 9. So going 6 of 9 or going 7 of 9. Just those little spots to get him to offensively is what they need to do. And I mean, they did it last year a little bit of the game, the pick and pop, and let him do that. They need to run more of that. It's, you know, maybe with the opportunities of getting the ball top of the key and clearing him out and letting tell him go, you know, go to the rim. Just drive. I mean, he put the ball on the ground. He can do that if he wanted to. So we'll see what they do there. I do want to give Nate props. That play for Oladipo, or I guess off Oladipo for Bogdanović. There's two of them here. So let me restart here. There are two plays I want to comment. First one is the Bojan three that basically put him ahead and basically sealed the game. If I remember right, put him up by three. I can't remember if I put him up by three or four at the time, but it was a great play. If you look at the design, you know, Oladipo goes to his right. You know, he does that a lot. He drives his right, and Bojan kind of fakes the screen off. And so what happens there is because the defense is like, I mean, the defenses are scared shitless of Oladipo going to the rim. They just are. Oladipo is so fast. I mean, we see it every day. He can beat anybody to the rim if he wants to. He really can. So both defenders have that in their mind, thinking, okay, well, are we going to switch here? Because then we got to get in front of Oladipo. He's going to beat us to the rim. So they were so worried about that Bojan's able to kind of fake the screen, get both guys think he's going to screen. So then they both hesitate for a second. Then he's able to kind of create enough space between the defender to get to the top of the key for a three-point shot. At the same time, Turner comes up. Obviously, that's the screen, which is where Turner was really valuable again. But that play design is kind of brilliant, to be honest. I mean, it's the kind of play where, for a while, it's like, right, teams are just double-teaming Oladipo out of the pick-and-roll. If you run with Turner, Thad, there's double-team him. But if you use Bojan, who always has probably a smaller defender on him most of the time, because that's what they do. They either hide their defender on Bojan, or he's got like a forward guard on him. Because the best defender you score on Oladipo, so usually it's the third best, let's say, wing defender is on Bojan. So then you get kind of a worse defender in it with a good defender, let's say. You get a worse defender with Bojan in the action, which always is valuable. And then instead of actually setting the screen and kind of giving them a chance to trap, you run some other completely misdirection play, and Bojan is just standing there wide open for three, and Bojan takes the shot. I mean, he missed it against the Knicks. I think he hit it another time in a game between then, so he's hit it, you know, inconsistently, let's say, but if Bojan hit that shot like he did consistently, they're going to be prepared to beat the end of games. And then the other play just perfectly turns at the screen, and Oladipo immediately read it and drove to his spot in the court. That was great. I mean, I don't know if that was a play design, and that was just Oladipo, you know, being Oladipo and recognizing what he needed to do. But, you know, it's those kind of plays that, you know, make you trust McMillan at the end of games, because there's something they're running. I mean, they see something. He actually has some play designs. You know, last season it was a lot of just iso Oladipos, which made sense because, like I said, Oladipo could beat anybody at the rim. But this year, he's finding a little bit of the antidote to that. You know, setting up Bojan, setting up Collins in the last game, kind of kicking it around. He's just doing little things to set other guys up, which is smart. It's just whether you can rely on them, I guess, or not. So then the third thing I had, you know, there's a fourth kind of thing out here, but I'll leave that for maybe the end of the podcast. The third thing I have is Doug McDermott. The Pacers got to find one to get Doug McDermott the ball. It's going to be 2 minutes on him, but they got to find one to get him the goddamn ball. 3-point shot attempts per game. So he's got three per game, right? About. So that's basically a grand total of, what, 39 attempts, 40 attempts, give or take, but say 38. And he's shooting 40%. But, man, there are times where Tyreek is driving to the rim and McDermott is just standing there wide open. And I understand if Tyreek comes from the right side and McDermott's on the left side and he's got to kick all the way across. But, man, they got to find a way to get that ball to him because he is open and he hits it at a really high rate. And he's just being underutilized at this point. And it's kind of the benching has kind of turned into the Tyreek Evans Sabonis show of Tyreek go to the rim, Sabonis clean it up, or pick and roll, or pick and whatever. And they just got to find a way to get the ball to McDermott. If not, you got to play McDermott more with the starters because Oladipo will find him. The other starters will find him in a way because they find Bojan. And maybe it involves McDermott having to move a little farther up the court. Maybe it involves him having to run a little more of the on the top of the three-point line like Bojan does to get open. But they got to find McDermott the ball more because, man, he has been a good three-point shooter and he's not getting anything. You know, he's taking three threes a game, but, like, he's playing, I guess, only playing 16 minutes. But, man, you feel like he should take five threes a game. Like, he should take five, and they all should be threes. I mean, that's what it feels like to me, but maybe I'm just wrong and whatever. I know there's been some 8.9 seconds articles out there about pass McDermott the ball and stuff like that. They just hope they can get it figured out and get him the ball more, to be honest. Because, I mean, Tyreek is good getting the rim, but there are nights where he's not good. But teams are scared of what he can do with the rim, that he should be able to use that to create shots for other guys. You know, he should be able to use his off-balance dribble on a kind of on a string to draw like every defender in and kick it out. Kick it out. You know, don't take the contact and take a hard two. Kick it out to McDermott in the corner, who will probably nail that 40% of the time, if not more. Just do that. And, you know, he does it sometimes, but he's just – I would love to see him do it more is all. That's all I'm saying. I'd love to see him do it more. And the last thing really on the game before I talk about the Pacers' next game is the Thad Young ejection, which was honestly complete and utter BS for why he was thrown out. He obviously elbowed him in the face. I mean, I think he did that. You can kind of see on the replay. I would agree. You can see elbow in the face. Is that a flagrant 2 elbow in the face? No. It's a play where you move the ball from side to side. You know, he's not intentionally throwing his elbow at him, you know. He's literally just moving the ball from side to side. Yes, he's trying to clear space. And yes, that probably warrants a technical foul or some kind of flagrant foul of like, hey, Thad, you can't really be doing that. But then you look at the replay, you basically have Olynyk up in Thad's grill. So, I mean, like, with his hands either on him or almost on him. So it just doesn't seem like it warrant a flagrant 2 throw out. I understand if you want to call flagrant and whatever, but to call for a flagrant 2 for just clearing, trying to clear space between Olynyk, who has a checkered history of one flopping and of being willing to take the contact for the flagrant foul, you know, that should be taken into account of like, okay, what really happened? You know, did he really hit him that hard? Or did, you know, he tried to clear space and Olynyk doesn't move because Olynyk is a tough dude. And, you know, I know people have their old things about Olynyk, but he's a tough dude and he will take the contact. He's kind of like the baseball player who will stand in and take the hit from the pitch. Like, he goes in and he takes the contact and he'll do whatever he can draw. You know, he looks for every little advantage he can on you. But, man, that's not a flagrant 2. That call is BS. And I hope the refs, honestly, hope the replay booth in New Jersey rescinds that flagrant and calls it just maybe a flagrant 1 or a technical whatever it is, and that doesn't get fined or anything, because, man, that was not a flagrant 2. He did not want to be thrown out of that game. And luckily the Pacers won, so it might not matter. It won't matter long term, but if they had lost that game, I mean, I'd be pissed if I was McMillan. He was kind of pissed in the moment. He got pissed some other calls, but I would have been pissed if I lost the game because one of my you know, most reliable, heart-of-the-team players got thrown out of the game second quarter because he literally tried to create space with the ball in his hands. I mean, that's just complete BS. Take a quick break, and then let's get to the preview of the Rockets. So for the second time in a week, the Pacers will play the Houston Rockets. A quick look at some of the guys who might not play in that game. Obviously, the big one is Eric Gordon. Did not play in the Pacers' first game. You look him up real fast. He is hoping to be back in the rotation. Now, the question is, it's a back-to-back for Houston. So that's a question of whether he'll play on the second night, the first night. But there is a decent chance. I guess it depends what happens Saturday. But if Gordon doesn't play Saturday, that he'll play Sunday or vice versa. So that's something to watch for. Gordon this season, you know, has not been as good as in the past, but Gordon, historically, last season, for example, he was 18 points a game on, like, a ridiculous, I guess he shot 36% from three, but 18 points a game is ridiculous. This year, he's more at 15, three-point percentage is down, overall field goal percentage is down, but small sample says he played 7 games, so I don't know how much you take that, you know, doesn't count for much. In terms of what the Pacers need to do better against the Rockets, I think it really sort of starts with the ability to score over 100 points. You know, the Pacers' defense was really solid against the Rockets. And holding a Rockets team that is one of the most, I mean, at least last year, one of the most lethal offenses to under 100 points, that's huge. You should win that every time. And the fact that they didn't is really disappointing and confusing. And yes, the Rockets are 4-1 on the road and not nearly as good as home for some reason. So that's something to look for. But, man, you know, I know Harden didn't have his best game, and they did a good job stopping Harden. And really Harden only had 28 points, but he didn't really have his best game, it felt like. And to not win that kind of game, it just sucks. Because, I mean, odds are Harden has a great game Sunday, and that's what beats him at the end of the day. You know what I mean? They'll play well, but Harden's just that good. I mean, Harden is, wherever you want to put him, third, fourth, fifth best player in the NBA. I guess what I mean by other guys that need to kind of step up, I thought really outside Sabonis and Oladipo, everybody else was kind of disappointment. I thought Joseph 0-4 was kind of bad. I don't think Evans was very good at 3-9. Turner, another disappointing game at 2-7 in the field. They need other guys involved. You know, Oladipo took 21 shots, the only guy to take double-digit shots on the team. He took more threes than anybody took actual shots. Oladipo's been the only one that was really there to play and ready to play, which was, you know, concerning and annoying. And I really hope kind of Thad Young maybe has something in him this game after being thrown out, whether that'll fire him up. You know, I bet that'll be a storyline going into the game is, you know, if Thad got thrown out for some BS call on Friday, is he going to be fired up to beat the Rockets? But with the Rockets, you know, they take a ton of threes, and it's really holding them under, you know, I mean, they held them 32%. That's probably what they need to do in this game, is hold them to about 32%. They could probably win. I just worry they can't do that again because, you know, at some point the Rockets, you know, they have this, they just shoot a ton. You know, a couple games they go 20 of 47 and kill and just destroy you. So they've got to figure that out. They have to figure out how they're going to get enough offense to win this game. Defensively, I think they know how to beat them. I think the, you know, the Rockets bench is not great. You know, outside of their starting five, they really just aren't, there aren't that many good players in this team. Anthony's not that great. I know Anthony got pretty much killed by a couple times. Either they kept switching him, they kept trying to isolate him. I mean, anytime Anthony was on the court, they just tried to put whoever he was on the ball to that person or get him onto Oladipo or something like that. So that was effective. In this game, again, I would like to see McDermott get more shots. McDermott took four shots, one of four and threes, and probably his worst game in terms of amount of threes he got him actually made for the Pacers. But, you know, I have to see him get four threes again. I mean, I feel like, you know, it's kind of like the math thing I say with the Rockets where they'll probably shoot more a higher percentage this than the last time. You know, McDermott takes four more threes, might hit all four. And, you know, the Rockets are going to shoot. So let's say they shoot 47 threes last time. So let's say they shoot again 47. Pacers took 28. I mean, you got to, there's some math here. We have to either make that up with free throws, which they did and shot pretty good for the free throw line, 20 of 30 from the free throw line. Or it's, you know, shooting so well from the field that it makes up for it. You know, they shot, they didn't shoot that great from the field overall. They shot 25 of 47 from the field, which isn't terrible, but, you know, I guess above 50% is not bad, but they shot so bad from three. And there's just, it was a bad offensive game. I don't know whether it was an aberration, something will happen again. And that's something to look for, really. That's kind of the key thing to look for is offensively, was the Rockets under 100 points good Pacers D or an aberration? And was the Pacers under 100 points good Rockets D or an aberration? And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see this game all of a sudden be a game played in the 110s. Now, that probably doesn't bow up for the Pacers if it's played in the 110s because I feel like the win games between whole teams about 105 is kind of the Pacers' magic number. They held the Heat to 102. Anything under 105, the Pacers should win those games, obviously. But so we'll see what happens there. In terms of, like, guys I'm looking for to have really good games, I think Turner, I like to see him do it back-to-back times. I thought he had a pretty good game, like I said, against the Heat tonight. I see that him do that again against the Rockets. Capella's, you know, Capella's a really good center, but Turner shouldn't have as many fits as he does with Capella. I mean, you know, Turner should be able to stretch him out at times and stuff like that. And then I think Oladipo's going to have a big game. You know, Oladipo kind of thrives in these big situations, mano on mano, Harden on Oladipo, Oladipo and Harden. He guarded him a lot of the game, too, the last game on Monday. So, you know, the only big difference right now is if Eric Gordon plays, that kind of adds a little depth to the Rockets. But we'll see if that actually happens. In terms of that, the kind of the key things I'm looking for, I don't think it'll be that much different than Monday's game, except in Houston. Like I said, Houston's on a back-to-back, so that could be a big deal for the Pacers because that could end up benefiting them. The Rockets have tired legs, and the Rockets have tired legs. They won't be able to make a ton of threes, and that would be big for them. You know, I think earlier in the week, I predicted the Pacers go 1-1 against the Rockets. I thought they'd win the home game and lose the road game, but I think that might be the reverse right now. I thought this would be a 2-2 week for the Pacers. You know, I got both games wrong. I thought they would lose to Miami and beat Philly. So I still want to stick with that prediction. I think Pacers go 2-2 this week. I think they beat the Rockets. It finished up the week 2-2. End up going 9-5 and kind of recover from a slow start to the week with a great end of the week. As always with this podcast, me and Tony will be back on Monday with a weekly show. So listen for that. And we'll have our podcast all next week. I know they have a big break between the Monday is it this week or next week? I'm trying to remember the schedule on top of my head. I think it's this week. After the Houston game, I believe they have a break until Friday, but they play Miami again. Let me check the schedule real fast just to confirm that. Yes, I am right. So they play Sunday, then they have 5 days off. Tony and I might be back twice that week, actually, then. We're going to do a mailbag. So if you want to submit a question, tweet at me if you're at M5, at Tony at TeasedNBA, or at Locked On Pacers. We'll probably do a Monday show and a Wednesday show kind of together. Wednesday probably the mailbag show, and then maybe we'll throw in some Tuesday, Thursday stuff to see what else is going on. So we can bring on, I'll get the kind of, eighth of the way through the season a little more. We're at 13 game mark. It's about 8th of the way through the season, give or take. 7th of the way through the season, right? 7th. 13 times 7 gets you to... Well, maybe it's like a 6. You know what? This math is kind of stupid, so I'm going to stop doing it. That's all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. And as always, have a great rest of your day. You were the knocks at the door, but you're not home. You spent your time on the floor, but you don't know.